Art is a business. I am very transparent about that, and one of my main approach when I speak to collector is to share the impact that they are putting into people's life by acquiring their painting. The idea of, no, you know, we don't want to make it too capital or too commercial. No, it is a commerce, it is a business. People live from that, institutions live from that. It is beautiful, it is ecstatic, it is cultivated, but it is a business.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is Marius Ngassam. Hi, Marius.
Hi, Johan.
Marius, you are an art advisor based in Berlin. Originally, you come from where?
From Cameroon.
From Cameroon.
Cameroon.
And tell me, how did you come into the art world, art field, art market?
Basically, I come from a dealing family, I will say. My mom, she was a fashion dealer. My dad was dealing all type of things, sculpture, collectible objects. He owns like a kind of a construction company where they was building specific objects for residences, villas. Mm-hmm. And yeah, basically I come from a very strong commercial selling, trading background. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were retailers. Your mother was retailing?
My mother was retailing.
In Cameroon?
In Cameroon, yeah. And she used to own a very beautiful showrooms where she has a very good connection with a certain woman mm-hmm. in the society, mm-hmm. which normally was not capable to mostly travel, but there was working, kind of working. And my mom was this woman who will fly to the Western world and bring high fashion, having showroom, organizing cocktail dinners, selling jewelries and beautiful dress, beautiful shoes. And yeah, it mm-hmm. was actually how I grew my entire life as a child. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no art at this point?
The art, yeah, my dad used to go to art fairs. He would buy a bunch of things mm-hmm. that basically I would not understand what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And we had beautiful painting. I remember we had a beautiful painting installation of Manolo Valdez, mm-hmm. which I actually discovered later when I was in Paris. I know this painting.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not very talkative about it. He mm-hmm. was not very informing about it somehow. But it was always about, oh, this is beautiful. It makes the house nice. And yeah, but he loves this, collectible furniture. He loves beautiful paintings. He was traveling to Italy to buy antiques, stuff like this, to make the house look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more like a deep passion for him and this way of loving to live with this kind of stuff that basically I had no idea what it was. For me, it was just like, yeah, my dad, he's just bringing a bunch of things.
And, mm-hmm.
yeah. Which is beautiful, but I have no idea what it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you went to school in Cameroon and to university too?
No, I didn't go to university. Actually, this is how I find myself here, because I had my baccalaureate in literature
uh-huh.
and languages. And yeah, and then, but it was never really my thing, because when I was in Cameroon, I was studying. My dad he wanted me to be something else. He wanted me to work in the aeronautic sector, because he was also an aeronautic engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always like, oh, you need to do maybe a medicine or be a lawyer or whatever. But it was not really my thing, which means academically, I was never so good.
Mm-hmm.
I was basically training myself to pass classes just to make them happy.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, my mom was very intelligent background lady, but she likes business. I was more following her own part. I would spend my whole time in the boutique. I would be part of how the boutique works. I would be traveling to the capital with her to meet some interesting people and discussing about fashion, jewelry.
And you were selling?
I was selling, yeah.
Yeah.
This is how I started selling.
Okay, so you enjoyed the selling?
I enjoyed the selling.
Yeah.
I love it. It is. Yeah. I like to be surrounded by interesting people who sometimes very intelligent, but also have different kind of need that makes them feel comfortable. It was a beautiful process of also be part of some privacy moment where you people really desire or they want something very specific or they have a specific need. It could be anything. It could be a shoes. It could be a watch. It could be a jewelry. It could be these kind of things. And the process of having a conversation and trying to find things was much more enjoyable for me than working in the office or being a doctor or a pilot, or I would say, yeah.
And so how did the transition work from helping your mother out and doing a study only half motivated into turning into an art advisor?
The art advisor, what happened is that in 2014, I'm coming to study in Europe. But for me, it was like a way of escaping, because living in Cameroon, there were so many things that I like to do, but still, I come from a very traditional background, which means I'm constantly controlled. And even if there was a passion of dealing, selling, still there was not a consideration for that for me. You know, there was still no, yeah, you can do that, but there are things that you have to do. And when I came here and I had this journey of like trying to make something, and then I decided not to go to school. And then I remember my brother told me that if you don't go to school, you have to either do something with your life or you have to go back to Cameroon. And then I started doing what I like to do, trading fashion. I will go to Italy, buy, building contacts with some fashion dealers, and then bring them here, enter some different community and diasporas, offer them cool branding stuff that mostly they don't have access in boutiques, and then building my portfolio. And then from fashion, I started building capital, and then I started investing the money, flying to Switzerland, building relationship with luxurious watch company. But during the whole process, there was already this love for art, because I love design and art. I like to live in a nice apartment with the most beautiful design. I love architecture. I love interior design. And on my process of trading very exclusive, limited MS, like MS bags, or having access to like very typical jewelry from Bulgaria, like really working struggling like a trader. And there was the art thing. I will always, every time when I will make a dime cent, I will run to the gallery to find a nice painting. And
okay, so your angle into the art market was more like an alternative asset approach of luxury lifestyle?
I would not say alternative asset. I always has been liking art. I was kind of collecting, amassing a lot of paintings. And I had a good community of people who love luxury, who also live with art. And the art came 6 years ago. A very, very good friend of mine who was visiting me from Paris, and then he came to my flat, and then he basically, we already had a relationship of walking to gallery together. And every time I would tell him, oh, go to X Gallery. They have incredible paintings there. The abstract is good. He's great. You should buy it. You should do that. It will make your home. There was always this way of approaching art with beauty and aesthetic that my friend really loved. And then they started taking the tips. And then there was a transition in my life where I didn't enjoy, but I was looking to a new things to do. And then I dropped the luxurious trading. I became a florist. I started doing flower for residency.
In Berlin.
In Berlin, yeah.
Okay, when you ended up here because of your activities in Europe.
No. I end up here in Berlin because my ex-partner was German. And then we used to live in Munich. And then we came to Berlin, and then somehow, and then he bought a hotel in South Africa. He wanted to move to South Africa. And then I was not like ready to go to South Africa because I didn't feel like there was nothing for me there, I would say. And then I decided to stay. And somehow also we was like really making things together. And then when there was this kind of splitting, I decided to take a back, like stopping, not stopping, but just taking a break. During the break, I started having this passion for making flowers.
Okay. And then you were a florist for corporate events?
No, I was florist more for my client who was buying actually watches and backs to me. And then I started doing flower home, and then they started offering me to do flowers for their houses.
But that's interesting. So what's sort of your it's like a holistic advisory. You help your clients with the art, but also with the flowers.
With the flowers.
And the furniture.
With
the
interior design.
Ah, and the clothing too?
And the clothing too.
Okay.
Like, it was a very deep relationship of really taking closely in consideration what I will actually offer to them.
Mm-hmm.
And from the flower, then I started working as an interior designer mainly. I started doing services. I remember my first job, it was a beautiful showroom that I just visited. I was going to one of my very good clients. She was visiting me from Paris, and then we started doing shopping together, and then she brought me to this beautiful showroom, and then I went to the showroom. It was in Gendarme Mall.
Yeah.
They were selling very expensive clothes.
It's a corner store.
Not like a corner store.
They
had like a private room inside the showroom.
Yeah.
And then I remember I told them that you can't sell such expensive clothes of thousands of euro with this kind of design. You need to really upgrade. And then the guy was like, oh, do you do design? And I was like, yeah, I do. I can help you to do that. And then he said, okay, I would like you to do that then. And then this was my first project. It went so quick. I invited them home. We had a dinner.
Okay,
and they loved the home and the art collection. And immediately he was like, no, you are the guy for the job. And then I did the job. And then from there, I started working in some design project.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the art thing started when I was walking into this incredible house project in Munich.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very good friend of ours. He spent millions of euro to build a house, to design it. And then came to the point he wanted things for the wall. And then he told us, oh, you could go maybe to a shopping store and they'll get me something. And then I remember during the meeting, I said, no, you can't spend 6 million to build a house and then you put print on your wall. You could put some art. And he was like, I don't know nothing about art.
Uh-huh.
I say, you don't have to know anything about art, but we can ensure you to look for you some artists, unique pieces, which let us say, I remember during the meeting, I said, okay, let us see as a decoration.
Yeah.
We will bring incredible artists into your heart, but as a decoration, don't see it as an art piece, just as a decoration. And after the job, the guy was very happy. He was very, very satisfied. And then this is how the idea of being an art consultant started, because there were so many things going there in his house, dinner party, and then I will start receiving a WhatsApp message. Hey, Marius, my friend told me that you find him some painting. I really like what you did there. Can we work together? And then I told to my friend, like, oh my God, people are calling me to literally looking for painting for them. And then he was like, yeah, you should do that. You should become an art consultant. I said, no, nobody will consume me being an art consultant. Yeah, I used to sell watches. I used to do best-selling art, like placing art. And then he said, oh, yeah, but it just came to you. Then what do you do then? And then I just started navigating around, looking for painting for people.
Mainly painting?
Mainly painting.
Or also photography and sculpture?
No, photography I was never asked.
Yeah.
And sculpture, some people try to ask me, but somehow I remember I told to someone that it's very difficult for me to really see building sculpture, which make it complex for me to really advise.
Okay, so people really ask you for advice. Yeah, they ask you for advice for paintings.
For paintings.
Okay.
But mostly the approach was more aesthetic.
Okay, yeah. And you think that there's a barrier for people to enter galleries, is it more about your personal advice and style?
I think something that I realize is that most of the people, they are kind of scared of gallery.
Yeah, right? They're scared. Why do you think they're scared?
They are scared because of this. It is a commercial space. And also, it depends also on the environment in where the gallery is, the kind of people who works in the gallery. Like, basically for me, I have a different gallery experiences. Let us say if I fly to London or I fly to Paris or to Berlin. And I know a lot of German collectors here in Berlin who travel a lot to other cities and they buy out there because they have a different kind of experiences. They are super welcome. There's a little spiciness of really considerations without trying to understand if they can afford art or not.
Yeah.
But in Berlin, it can be sometimes a little bit like, you know, like, yeah, you need to have a certain appearance. And also something I realized that in Berlin, a lot of world travel to Berlin to live a freedom of life, which means it's mostly not so visible.
Yeah.
And because the gallery don't see this visibility of world, they create a certain lack of consideration. And these people now in Berlin, they need to be associated with a different kind of people who have different tastes, who approach them differently, who has a different form of relationship. And I do have some collector that they never went to the gallery.
Mm.
Like I was even like, oh, we have a nice gallery doing a nice meeting. You should come. No, why should I go to a gallery? And then I'm like, you own so much painting. This is so crazy that you don't go to gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that they just don't feel like the gallery gave them a certain thing that they are really searching for, which means the romanticism of acquisition, the beauty language of convincing them. I think because I always say when you sell a painting, it's not only about a painting. You are selling a dream. You are selling a philosophy, you are selling a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and because they don't get this way of things, this is why they don't go to gallery. And also, this is why they are scared of gallery, because they just don't build. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the strange thing, especially in Germany or in Berlin, is that obviously it's a commercial environment, but at the same time, it does want to be, maybe, you know, and your approach is very much from the aesthetic and from, you know, decoration or living with it. And I think that the power of art in your home, you know, the unique element is very enriching in your life. You know, and it makes your life a better life. But at the same time, the art world, I don't know, is scared of the commercial aspect to really sell. You know, we are the only ones, I think, who have a transparent price policy.
I think, to be honest with you, art is a business. It is a business. And I am very transparent about that.
Yeah.
And one of my main approach when I speak to collector is to share the impact that they are putting into people's life by acquiring their painting. And it is a business because maintaining a gallery costs a lot of money. You have the personnel, you have people who has family, who depend, who live from that. And on the other hand, you have the artist that he only don't have to live being an artist, but also we create an opportunity of him living as an artist. And these demand capitals, these demand fund, these demand that the gallery need to make some sales, collector need to acquire works. And the idea of like, no, you know, we don't want to make it too capital or
too commercial.
No, yeah, it is a commerce. It is a business. People live from that. Institutions live from that. It is beautiful. It is aesthetic. It is, it's cultivated, but it is a business.
And what's your ratio when you make suggestions? What's more important, the return, emotional life quality return on investment or potential return on investment by the value growth?
I think most of the time it depends. Most of the time my approach is more about looking for something that fits for them.
Yeah.
Something that they can afford. And the potentiality of growth is also about how I personally advise people, the kind of art, the type of art, what is the trending, what are the chances based on the aesthetic aspect, the visual aspect, the price investment from the base foundation, and how do the painting can even reborn himself in the future, because I have to check all this aspect before like saying, okay, I think this is actually something that you could go. And even if it doesn't go crazily up in the future, at least you'll get what it is. Because I think I always say, let us say simple, like, it's not crazy what I will say, but a painting from 100 euro to 50,000 euro, it's not expensive. You can justify that. You can look a painting and say, okay, this is 2x3. The artist technique, the number of hours, the production.
It can be justified.
It's not like a 50,000 euro painting. You are buying a masterpiece. Now, I think sometimes we have to be, I always tell the collector, no, your taste is expensive, but the work is not expensive because you can still justify a painting in certain scales of price by the scales of production, the size, the technique.
No, and then emotional yield too, you get from it, right?
Like the emotional yield is very personal.
Exactly, yeah.
But intellect, you know, the thing is that when you are dealing with people who are very intelligent, like you have all these doctors, lawyers, architects, they work with numbers, with statistics. The intellectual part, it is not really highly considered when it comes into a certain price scales. Or only if it is really, really expensive, like we are going for $500,000 painting.
Sure.
Then we talk about emotion, we talk about feeling, we talk about desire. But if you are buying a piece between €100 to €50,000, yes, you have to like it, you have to love it. If you can afford it, it's okay. But do we still have to strongly consider it as a potential financial return? No, because I think it can be justifiable.
Okay, so first is the match, that it fits the personality, the style, the like of the client. And second, the potential return on investment financially. After that bridge of 50K, depending on the wealth of the people.
Depending on the wealth, yeah.
And you provide research then also, that you make a ratio between secondary, primary market. I mean, it always depends on the budget of the clients.
Mm-hmm.
But I think 20,000, 30,000 euro, that's a mark. In that range, it makes sense to start to look, how is the secondary market?
How is the secondary market?
Yeah. You know, to investigate, to see, have work been resold? And I think if it's, I don't know, 30% less at auction, that's still a pretty okay ratio. You know, if it's, I don't know, if secondary market is for similar body of work at 10%, then maybe there's space for debate about prices, which I think is a very also problem of the art market, that a new reality is that you can't ignore the secondary market. You know, I mean, it is a market, and if you ignore it, I think that doesn't work. And is that something you do sort of a due diligence for your clients, or is it really more about that's the budget and this is, you propose things and then when they like, or you decide for them?
Mostly I do the decision, because as I said, most of the collectors that I work with, there's this strong approach of beauty and aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I do some research for them. But also sometimes, it depends when you check the auction, which is the secondary. There are so many factors that can make a painting not performing well. And sometimes the painting can just not be a good art quality of the artist. It's not something really strong. And of course, it may not be strong, but still, the slicing price difference must not be so extreme, like 30K in the gallery and then you get it there for 10K or whatever.
Yeah.
But basically, I do this research.
Yeah.
I actually, this is what I do every morning. I check all the auctions. I track the gallery. I track what they are selling.
Mm-hmm.
What is the auction estimation? I track the first market, the primary market, the secondary market. I track the collectors to figure out where can I have accessibility on the works. But most of the time, it only makes sense when I'm dealing with a collector who are looking for something very specific, because my way of working, I actually work like a gallery. I give to collector gallery price. I try to reduce their financial risk, which means like I have a different kind of relationship, because my concept is all about continuously encourage them to buy painting, to buy anything I offer to them.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to maintain this continuity, it is important for me to also protect their wallet. And protecting their wallet means that creating accessibility to artists at the right time, at the right price, and why not a little bit the best offer for them to not take so much risks, but still continuously looking for something that, I don't know, could be nice or something that could fit whatever inside the house. But mostly this kind of transaction only happens when I have a collector who is asking me specifically for a work, which can be very price and tagging. Mm-hmm. And then I will go through this round research of understanding, okay, is it actually worth it to buy the works? And then we don't talk about investment. We talk about emotion.
And tell me, how are the mechanics? Like, how do you get a percentage, or how does it work?
I usually get a commission from the gallery.
Yeah.
And then I get a commission from the collectors.
Okay, that's transparent to all sides.
It is very transparent because they have the sometimes I actually send them to the gallery. I say, go to the gallery, look at the artworks and see me what you think. And then they will just come to the gallery like a very anonymous. And then on the backstage, they will ask me, can you close the deal for me?
Uh-huh, okay, okay. Because I remember there was a great art advisor. It was interesting. When I started my gallery, art advisory was very uncommon in Germany or Europe. And there was one art advisor in New York who was actually, I think, pretty much responsible for half my business at that time, was Jack Tilton. And he brought many collectors to, unfortunately, he passed away. But for example, Craig Robbins, you know, the inventor of Miami Design District, he started collecting because of Jack. And there it was always, he got, I think, 10% or 5% on the turnover, plus half the discount. So whenever he pushed me down, whatever discount I gave him, he got half. The client.
Yeah.
So, which always resulted in pretty bloody results on my end, because the more he pushed me down, the higher his fee was. know? Where are your clients? Are they in Berlin or where are they?
I work a lot with Americans,
mm-hmm.
and I work a lot with French collectors, and also I have a lot of Chinese collectors,
mm-hmm.
and East European, mostly a lot of East European collectors. And yeah, I do also have some German collectors, but basically it is, I work mostly with, how do we say, bouche à oreille, like people just talk around and a friend visit a friend who's
okay,
a nice
one
painting.
Mouth to mouth. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And basically always come like a project. Oh, I have this house. I want you to,
okay, to fill a house then.
To
yeah.
fill a house.
But then you do the art only or everything?
Sometimes I have to collaborate with some designer, architect.
Yeah. Or interior designer.
Interior
yeah.
designer, we collaborate and then they present me, okay, what do you need? And then I'm just filling up the house with, and also I work with budget. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes somebody will say, I need 10 painting. I have X budget. And then I will be scrolling around looking for the white painting.
Interesting.
For the house.
Uh-huh.
And,
okay.
Yeah. But
yeah, that's more and more business where we also receive in the US from actually interior designers. I mean, they buy high-priced work sometimes from the secondary market. Like we just sold a Pine work from the Zero Group. I think that's something, for example, which is Axel Verwoerd, for example, you know, the interior designer, dealer, architect. I think that he had a significant influence on the whole Zero market because he started to furnish people's houses with that type of work, you know, with like fire drawings by Pine or with Uecker nail paintings. And for a period of time before the market sort of recognized it, and he created more like living atmospheric spaces, which then had an impact on the market because people just were willing to pay high prices to live with these objects in their house. And I think while speaking to you, I noticed that something we maybe, especially in Germany, don't appreciate enough, that this is a driving force in the market.
I think the thing is also because the way the people who are actually dealing with the works and the people who are actually driving the art worlds are not also very, the communication, because I think it's also about how you communicate to the people, you know, like, as I said, basically my approach of art was beauty, aesthetic, decoration, and dealing with the fact that I spend a lot of time with very intellectual people, it can be, it is a little bit like, the thing is that in Germany, there's this over-intellectualization of things, which also make the sales and the surviving of the artist very, very difficult. This idea of having an artist that needs a certain way of validation, or is belonging into something more specific, or having a strong history to be, which means it is a very, very difficult thing. Like, specifically when things are so, specifically for a painter, when a painter had this over approach of seeing it as a very intellectual acquisition, it makes things very difficult for the gallery, for the artist, for even the people to allow themselves to really appreciate the work. Mm-hmm. Because there's no sense of validation. They need to have the reading validation. They need to have the gallery validation. And also because the gallery believe that it is a way of selling, but in long term, it is difficult. It's really, really, really difficult. This is why, for me, it was always very easy to just say, you know, buy this beautiful abstract for your dining table, creating experiences, make them understand the art of living, the idea of what art is. It should be something joyful. It should be something ecstatic. The intellectual approach is about how you build your philosophy, your language with the work, the way you explain it to your friend, why you bought the work, what you see about it, without trying too much, being me, Mario, the factor of trying to create a form of validation based on writing, based on a different kind of strong power factor for the painting then to be officially acquisitionated. This is why if you go to the United States, people really enjoy living with art because they see it as a beautiful thing. And then they see how things go further with times, and either it goes up crazily or the artist gain kind of museum recognition or have the gratitude of working with good gallery. Yeah, but basically it's all about just liking the works, which in Germany is not the case. It's long reading and can be long way of thinking.
But what you just said was museum recognition. I have the feeling sort of the word you describe is so far away from the cultural discourse at this point. Like when you look at the recent Berlin Biennial or what's sort of displayed in the institution, you almost have the feeling there's a denial of aesthetic and beauty and the pure art aesthetic. It has to be, I don't know, somehow politically motivated, contextualized, dealing with the big questions of our time, from gender to climate to what else?
It is actually a very, I'm actually very happy that you mentioned about it. I think this is a very, very big problem in specifically in the Western world, the way that the approach of art is a little bit over politics. I really understand that there are so many things going in the world. We have gender, we have climate, but we also have beauty. We also have decoration. We also have happiness. We have so many things. Life is not only about gender and climate. Life is also about people living. Life is also about creating an environment of hope by curating space that people can just appreciate life through watching a painting without constantly going through the process of trauma, of constantly reminding people like, oh, life is this, you have to be that. But it's very specifically in Germany, you see it a lot. Like when sometimes, I'm not a museum guy, to be very honest with you,
mm-hmm.
because I like to walk to gallery, but not to museum, because this idea of politically institutionalizing what they are showing, how they are influenced, sometimes it's not even very intellectual influential, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because I think a lot. I like beautiful things, but also I like when you want to intellectualize me and teach me something, you have to define what is truly meaningful for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go to museum and then everything or all museum is only about how can I express it anymore? It's all about genders, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's okay to show about gender, but not all the museum have to show about gender. Yeah. We need some nice exhibition showing about contemporary artists, our time, what is life and our movement, and allowing artists to, like, not even allow artists, allowing the space to breathe different kind of form of energy without constantly trying to. And this is one of the reasons why you will barely never ever see me to museum, because I think even the intellectual approach that they are constantly trying to present us, to show us, or to push, is still, I don't validate that, because now there are many things that could be shown.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not against talk about gender or climate change, but I think we could do everything. Specifically, there are so much museums, they don't have to do all the same.
Mm-hmm. And with your background from Cameroon, do you just look for the beauty, or do you focus also on, I don't know, contemporary African art or certain, I mean, we see these regional trends in the art market reoccurring from, I don't know, Leipzig painting to Africa to, I don't know what's next. Right now, I think First Nation Australian artists are really in the focus. Is that something you follow?
No, I don't follow this trend. I always work very globally aspect, which means even when I do a presentation to a collector who will need some stuff for his house, and then I will be like, yeah, we should need to add some German artists, African contemporary. We could go to Asia. Like the last year, I work a lot with Singapore, look from the Asian artists, and then we really curate the house to make it. I like to say we make your home look very intellectual, very, you know, like, and they just love it. Like, oh my God, you know, this is from, the artist is from Singapore, the one is from Hong Kong. Oh my God, this guy is a Philippine artist, he's doing this. And then I create this thing, and then they are just like really, it's also a different way of approaching intelligency, I would say a different way of intellectualizing art, not based on what they are doing or how they are creating, but also diversify the aesthetic, the beauty, the decoration part, the ideology, and but the trending, I was never a trending follower, because I think when you work as an art consultant, following trend can be a really disastrous, specifically when they have this strong influence on Instagram. You see millions of different kind of abstract, different kind of figurative, different kind of this, different kind of that.
Yeah.
And if you follow the trend, no, this is going to be like, I always try to find the uniqueness, you know, like, it's like a little bit like when I went to your last exhibition with Miss Armstrong, the Canadian artist. Immediately I was very drive. I was, oh my God, this is so cool. This is so nice. This is this. And then I started, there was this reflection of excitement of discovering, oh my God, she's amazing. She's good. The color, the patterns,
but I mean, it's important, especially with her work. I think it makes a very big difference to see them in real, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have the conversation, the color, how does it feel? I say, it looks good. And there's always this thing like, oh, where can I put it? I say, oh, you can put it in top of the sideboard at the entrance, which means my collector, the way I build the relationship with them, the way I express myself with them, it is also the way they respond and communicate with me.
Mm-hmm.
Which means like when he asks me, where do I put it? I have to find where they should put it. Like to actually not only find the work, but to find a space where when he walks inside his house, he has to enjoy it in the most super well presenting way, even if he's not too emotionally attached to the work, but the work is just good what it is, and it the house look good with the work. Yeah,
but it's so funny because it's like a very normal. We were looking at a Barbara Kruger work and had to think where we can put it and how to get it in the house and so on. And it's like you buy it because you want to live with it, but I find it interesting that this is something in the it's sort of rare in a public conversation, I would say, that these questions matter.
These questions matter a lot. Like, I remember I was visiting this collector in Paris, and she actually changed the whole painting in the house because there was something she loved, and that painting didn't fit with the other painting.
Yeah.
And we have to recurate it 200 square meter apartment
with
objects, go to the art storage, selecting painting that fit, because aesthetic art is aesthetic. I don't know, like, I think we have to be very strong. It is aesthetic, it is something beautiful, it is there, which means I think the intellectuality of art is already made by the artist. The process of thinking, of creating, of building, and the other part, the gallery, that brings all the people around it to create an exhibition. This is intelligence, the biography, the community, which means when you go to the gallery, like, come on, the painting is already on the wall. What kind of intelligence are you looking? It's already there. The gallery created a community. They created a movement society. The painting has been stretched. It has been framed. The idea has been presented on the canvas. And at the end, the painting just needs to find where he fit, where he can live, where people can enjoy it. Then comes beauty. Then come the environment. Then come the sofa, the sideboard, because the painting is the heart of the house. And to centralize that heart, aesthetic is very important. And this is basically what collector always discuss about. Like, it may be so intellectual, but at the end, oh, where does it fit in my home? Oh my God, in my dining table, I really like that one. Then elements start pumping in the chair, the sofa, the carpet, and it's aesthetic. It is, and we have just to be very honest and say that this is what it is.
And now you focus on art most of the time.
Yeah, basically for the last 6 years,
okay,
it has been very, very busy.
Less watches, less MS. More and more art.
More and more art, because I was trying still to like doing better, and then I realized that the other part of the demand, because art was much more personal.
Yeah.
It was the family, it was the children, it was the heritage, it was beauty. The painting was combining everything in once. Mm-hmm. Like,
and more unique, huh?
And than more unique.
Patek Philippe or
whatever. More unique than a Patek Philippe or than a Messbach.
Yeah.
There was a lot of emotion involved into that, which demanded me a lot of work to find something.
But at the same time, it's more difficult too, no? Because a Patek Philippe or all these other sort of luxury brands, they have a certain solid connotation. Blue chip, you know, it's clear what you do. With art, it's too big of a field, no?
I think it was also how art, the thing is that with art, Maison Marouf, the move, it's funny because there was a lot of young entrepreneur guys who kind of living and having a different way of lifestyle. And what I did was to kind of influence also to see things in a different way. I remember we used to have this moment, be young, but think old. Mm-hmm. And then I will tell to a friend, wow, why? Like, you should buy painting. It's a good heritage. It's not about how it is also about the language communication, how you communicate with the community, how you approach the young men and say, you know, it is great to have a beautiful painting home. How do you feel when you have a nice dinner? There's this beautiful astra, the lifestyle, inviting them into your private house, bringing people who loves art, will live to us, will enjoy art, who has a different perspective, idea of luxury, you know? And then they just get driving into that, like, want to live the same way, want to have this beautiful painting in their office, in their bedroom, in their living room, starting seeing things differently, starting, like,
connoisseurship, no?
It's all about communication.
Yeah.
The thing is that if you communicate in a very transparent and also in a way that it needs to serve what you are doing, then it makes it easier to sell a painting to them.
Mm-hmm. And last, how do you inform yourself? Like, how do you discover artists?
In the past, I used to travel. Like, I remember when I had my first big house, I wanted to be like on my best. I went to Singapore, I met some artists that I first find on media. But I was mainly focused on going to find the works in Will. And I will travel to Africa, look for some artists, and then talking about them to the collectors and people who like the house, more like working, developing their biography and stuff, a presentation information of the artists and stuff like this. And also working with Trusting Gallery when you have like one of a dealer that you know that, okay, this dealer is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, oh, what do you think about this artist? Mm-hmm. But basically, I don't do a transaction if I never saw a painting in real.
Okay, you need to see it in real.
I need to see it in real.
Okay.
I need to see at least 3 or 4 paintings of the artist.
Yeah.
to really understand, okay, this is exactly what he's doing.
Exactly.
And the level of quality, the level of ideology.
But once you know the practice, you can buy online as
when
well.
When I know the practice, I don't have to see the work. Yeah. It's not important.
Yeah.
Because basically, it's very, I rarely place a work in real life.
Yeah.
Very, very. Basically, my collector, everything is just, it's a WhatsApp photo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even sometimes it's not even a real photo, it's a screenshot of a screenshot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will be like explaining, yo, I saw the painting or I saw what the artist is doing. But I will say in 99.8%, there was always satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Like a collector say, okay.
Because I understood correct. You make the decision, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a lot of trust they
This is why I always say that a collector is not only your collector, he's your husband, your wife,
and
your
shrink.
Child, you are everything, like you're always like and you need and because it is so important because you need to really you have to be deep into the relationship. It's like a married relationship. And then you understand what they want, what they need, and yeah.
And when they come to your house because you have your own collection. That's sacred, or you when they want something, you sell it?
It depends. Basically, what I do is that I showcase what I have,
mm-hmm.
and then for what I have, I encourage them to
buy another one
of the artists.
Yeah,
this is what I do. Yeah.
Okay, great. So you have to come visit to get the Marios universe.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very colorful. It's very alive. And it's people who just like to enjoy, who see painting in a different way. And yeah, and also what I actually like is also that the last years we have been dealing with a lot of very German Western conservative,
mm-hmm.
which also we could kind of, they could see actually how beautiful it is to live with art
mm-hmm.
in a different context.
Mm-hmm.
And they became very strong collector base, which basically I know some collector that they would never, I know some German collector that they would never buy a painting without going to the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
But just by developing this relationship, seeing, because my home is all about expressing my taste mm-hmm, as a collector.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You and come, identity. You see, I don't have to say nothing. I don't have to talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do too much explanation because, as I said, the same way the gallery already bring all this element,
yeah.
I'm already doing that, which means I curate the house for you to understand how you can live with the painting.
Yeah.
And then I do that. And then now they don't even, you just send the PDF and then they will tell, okay, what do you think? And then I will go to the home, search for the space and like say, okay, I think this could fit here. And then they will just say, okay, we go for that.
Great. Mario, thank you so much for taking us on the journey. Very refreshing approach. And you're looking forward to see what the future brings.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for welcoming me.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.